After President Trump's speech last night, what we now know and still don't know about health care reform and tax reform, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. In early trading today, half hour into trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up more than 1.1%, about 232 points. The S&P and the NASDAQ were each up significantly as well. Part of that, comments from the Federal Reserve, a couple of the Fed presidents. Let's bring in Susan Schmidt, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Good morning.
Good morning.
So even as people were focused on Mr. Trump's speech, we have a couple of the Federal Reserve presidents out there on the hustings, and they said something that the bond market certainly reacted to.
We had comments come out from our Fed board members yesterday that implied that they are ready for a rate increase. So much more in the line of a potential increase in the near term, which the market had not been expecting. The market had really been anticipating more towards June. So we're seeing a big change in the 10-year Treasury yield as a result. And remember that we have a Fed meeting coming up in March. And the odds of an increase in the rates for that meeting from last week were 50% or so, are now almost 80% expectations by the market to see that rate increase in anticipation of an additional 25 raise in the interest rates by the Fed.
So why the bullishness in the stock market?
The Fed thinks that we can withstand a hike in interest rates. It means that they're seeing very positive economic data. They see a lot more economic data than the headline numbers that are released to the public and that the market picks up on these announcements every morning. And so they're seeing some very positive backdrop here. The market's taking a lot of comfort in that. And in a good economic environment, that's very good for business. So we should see that corresponding rise in stock prices.
Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings, thank you so much.
Thank you.
President Trump last night in his address to Congress sketched out the briefest of outlines about how he'd like to repeal and replace Obamacare. The president wants it easier to sell insurance across state lines and to push down the price of medicine. He'd also like the transition to be smooth for the 9 million or so people who get insurance through the federal exchanges. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has more from our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia. Dan, I wouldn't call these parts especially surprising.
Yeah, I think that these principles are pretty consistent with the plan that the House leadership is working on. But the president did throw people a bit of a curve when he said this.
We should implement legal reforms that protect patients and doctors from unnecessary costs that drive up the price of insurance.
Now, of course, I'm not in President Trump's head, but this is likely a call to cap lawsuits against doctors. The theory is that this would lower the cost of medical malpractice insurance, and it might get doctors to stop overprescribing tests, afraid that they'd get sued. This would hopefully keep health spending in check. But Harvard economist Amitabh Chandra said he's skeptical.
State-level malpractice reforms have really not been shown to reduce malpractice pressure on physicians.
If the president plans to inject this perennial healthcare debate back into the spotlight, Chandra says people should know that the problem that doctors worry about being sued is very real, but so far there aren't any good solutions.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. Now back to President Trump's speech last night, but turning to the timing of tax changes. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell was taking notes during the president's speech, and he joins us from St. Paul. Good morning to you.
Good morning, David.
What did you hear the president saying about tax policy?
You know, David, if I boil down what I heard, it is that we're still talking about major tax reform, but what we're going to get is tax cuts. But I'm skeptical that we're going to get this massive rewrite of the tax code. Part of it had to do with the lack of details. For example, on the corporate tax side, a key plank to the Paul Ryan corporate tax reform is the border adjustment. President Trump came close, hinted at that he kind of endorsed the basic idea, but he didn't really quite endorse it, which is why I step back and say, you know, we have Republican control of Congress. We have a Republican president, but they may not agree on major tax reform.
And it's interesting to parse early reaction from the president's conservative allies on the speech.
Well, the conservative allies were disappointed, particularly in the business press. If you go to the Wall Street Journal editorial page, and like a lot of the commentary, the political optics of the talk were good, but they were very disappointed that he just didn't detail the tax cuts, that he just left things vague, and he didn't embrace the sort of supply side growth economics that they support. But even when you look at conservative allies who don't support the supply side economics. This is the main message that they took out. Look, we're still in campaign mode. We're still making these broad statements about what is going to change on the tax front and the fiscal front, but we're not giving those details, and that's what we need to hear.
What was more specific is the president's position on deregulation. He's moving forward on that.
David, I think this is like the most significant part of the speech when it comes to the economy. Now, it was only like one paragraph, but he was blunt, he was straightforward, and he said that we have taken an historic effort to massively reduce job-crushing regulations. And he talked about for every new regulation, they're going to get rid of two. They're going to have these regulatory officers in every agency that is going to be going through the regulations and making cuts. And so this, to me, if you look at this administration early on, this is where they're having their major economic effect is on the regulatory state.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell in St. Paul. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Now to Time Inc., not to be confused with the media conglomerate Time Warner or Time Warner Cable, which is now Charter Communications. Time Incorporated, which does the news magazine that started it all, plus Sports Illustrated, People, Fortune, and more, says it wants anyone who's serious about buying it to speak up by next week. This according to the New York Times today. The Better Homes and Gardens people are interested. That's Meredith Corporation. And Edgar Bronfman Jr., the famous private equity guy who used to run Warner Music, is interested. Advertising revenue is up at Time Inc., but the business hasn't really set the world on fire since it was spun off from Time Warner 3 years ago. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.